It wasn't a display of life to excite our imaginations. There was nothing that ran, or flew, or even swam swiftly or skillfully. Except for the size of some of the creatures, it wasn't very different from, and rather less various than, the kind of life a student would gather from any summertime ditch nowadays for microscopic examination. Such was the life of these shallow seas through 100 million years or more in the early Paleozoic period. The land during that time was apparently absolutely barren. We find no trace nor hint of land life. Everything that lived in those days lived underwater for most or all of its life. Between the formation of these lower Paleozoic rocks, in which the sea scorpion and the trilobite ruled, and our own time, there have intervened almost immeasurable ages, represented by layers and masses of sedimentary rocks. There are first the upper Paleozoic rocks, and above these the geologists distinguish two great divisions. Next above the Paleozoic come the Mesozoic, middle-life rocks, a second vast system of fossil-bearing rocks representing perhaps 100 millions of swift years and containing a wonderful array of fossil remains, bones of giant reptiles and the like, which we'll presently describe, and above these again are the Cainozoic, recent-life rocks, a third great volume in the history of life, an unfinished volume of which the sand and mud that was carried out to sea yesterday by the rivers of the world to bury the bones and scales and bodies and tracks that will become at last fossils of the things of today constitute the last written leaf. These markings and fossils in the rocks and the rocks themselves are our first historical documents. The history of life that men have puzzled out and are still puzzling out from them is called the record of the rocks. By studying this record, men are slowly piecing together a story of life's beginnings and of the beginnings of our kind, of which our ancestors, a century or so ago, had no suspicion. But when we call these rocks and the fossils a record and a history, it mustn't be supposed that there's any sign of an orderly keeping of a record. It's merely that whatever happens leaves some trace, if only we're intelligent enough to detect the meaning of that trace. Nor are the rocks of the world in orderly layers, one above the other, convenient for men to read. They're not like the books and pages of the library. They're torn, disrupted, interrupted, flung about, defaced, like a carelessly arranged office after it's experienced in succession a bombardment, a hostile military occupation, looting, an earthquake, riots, and a fire. And so it is that for countless generations this record of the rocks lay unsuspected beneath the feet of men. Fossils were known to the Ionian Greeks in the 6th century BC. They were discussed at Alexandria by Eratosthenes and others in the 3rd century BC, a discussion which is summarized in Strabo's Geography, 20 to 10 BC. They were known to the Latin poet Ovid, but he didn't understand their nature. He thought they were the first rude efforts of creative power. They were noted by Arabic writers in the 10th century. Leonardo da Vinci, who lived so recently as the opening of the 16th century, 1452 to 1519, was one of the first Europeans to grasp the real significance of fossils, and it's been only within the last century and a half that man has begun the serious and sustained deciphering of these long-neglected early pages of his world's history. Second, speculations about geological time vary enormously. Estimates of the age of the oldest rocks by geologists and astronomers, starting from different standpoints, have varied between 1,600,000,000 and 25 million. That the period of time has been vast, that it's to be counted by scores and possibly by hundreds of millions of years, is the utmost that can be said with certainty in the matter. It's quite open to the reader to divide every number in the appended time diagram by 10 or multiply it by 2. No one can gainsay him. Of the relative amount of time as between one age and another, we have, however, stronger evidence. If the reader cuts down the 800 million we've given here to 400 million, then he must reduce the 40 million of the Cainozoic to 20 million. And be it noted that whatever the total sum may be, most geologists are in agreement that half or more than half of the whole of geological time had passed before life had developed to the later Paleozoic level. 800 or 80 million years ago, Azoic or Archaeozoic, possibly without life at all. 600 or 60 million years ago, Proterozoic, without visible traces of living structure, age of animalculae, jellyfish, green scum, and the like. 360 or 36 million years ago, early Paleozoic, before the appearance of any vertebrate animals, age of sea scorpions and trilobites. 260 or 26 million years ago, later Paleozoic, age of fishes, amphibia, and swamp forests. 140 or 14 million years ago, Mesozoic, age of reptiles. 40 or 4 million years ago, Cainozoic, age of mammals, grass, and land forests. The reader reading quickly through these opening chapters may be apt to think of them as a mere swift prelude of preparation to the apparently much longer history that follows. But in reality, that subsequent history is longer only because it's more detailed and more interesting to us. It looms larger in perspective. For ages that stagger the imagination, this earth spun hot and lifeless, and again for ages of equal vastness, it held no life above the level of the animalculae in a drop of ditch water. Not only is space, from the point of view of life and humanity, empty, but time is empty also. Life is like a little glow, scarcely kindled yet, in these void immensities.